Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Ending the U.S.-Israel war of choice on Iran is proving to be very difficult, if not impossible. The Americans and Israelis fail to publicly acknowledge they have lost this war. Both have their demands, but Iran has the leverage. Iran is calling the shots. Crosstalking the MOU, I'm joined by my guest, Sarah Lee Whitson in New York. She is a human rights lawyer. In Washington, we have Mohammed El-Menshawi. He's a political commentator. And in Lebanon, we cross the Hisham Safadine. He is an associate professor at the University of British Columbia. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Sarah, I'm calling this program Iran Calls the Shots here. And before we started our program here, you were about to talk about with me about J.D. Vance, and I'm really glad that you wanted to do that because he seems to be the star of this reality TV show that doesn't have much resemblance to reality on the ground. For example, during a press conference, Regent said, if we do this, if we do that, all of this conditionality, I'm sorry, Mr. Vice President, it's in the MOU. Your president signed it. I don't understand all this conditionality. The reason why I bring it up is that the American side is attempting to rewrite the MOU in real time. And this doesn't bode well for the future. Go ahead, sir.
The MOU is rife with ambiguity, and I think that's not by accident. And there are dramatically differing interpretations of what the terms of the MOU require. For example, whether or not the withdrawal of Israeli forces from Lebanon is a requirement that is necessary to uphold Lebanon's sovereignty, which of course it is. That's okay. The most important thing, and the reason why I think this MOU and everything that's come out of this war could be a good thing, is number one, it is bringing peace and stability, or greater peace and stability, to the region. And it could potentially create a lot more regional security, particularly because the terms of the agreement don't just cover Iran and the bombardment of Iran, but Lebanon. Second, it creates an ongoing negotiation and discussion between America and Iran, which is a good thing. The more they continue talking, the more they continue interfacing with each other, the better prospects for such peace and security. And it has the potential to transform America's relationship, a very hostile relationship of many decades with Iran, which can only be a good thing. And finally, I see a silver lining here, because it is forcing Americans and the Trump administration and the Democratic Party to reassess and reexamine their relationship with Israel, which is what brought the United States into a war in the first place. So this is having dramatic consequences in the United States, in the elections that are taking place, and numerous primaries Tuesday, in the United States. And some are saying that J.D. Vance's very critical comments of Israel are really just a forerunner for his presidential run. So it gives you a sense of where public opinion is in the United States.
Well, we could only hope so. And I want to echo your point about the United States and Iran talking to each other. That means the United States sees the Islamic Republic of Iran as a legitimate partner. And that is a big improvement here. Let me go to Mohammed here. Let's stay with J.D. Vance here. J.D. Vance says the U.S. hopes to transform the Middle East. Well, it certainly is transforming it, but I don't think in a way that he had expected, certainly not the way Donald Trump expected or Benjamin Netanyahu. Go ahead, Mohammed.
Yes, indeed, J.D. Vance said so. However, I believe there is transformation is taking place currently in the Middle East. Iran is not going to be the enemy everybody fears. Arab Gulf state, the GCC, even though they were attacked by Iran several times during this hostility of America and Israel against Iran, they know that Iran is here to stay, and it's a historical neighbor, and it won't go anywhere. And I believe there is rethinking in the region about the historical and the strategic relation with Iran. Israel is the most party to lose from this new transformation. We have in United States, J.D. Vance is the potential leader, a potential successor of Trump. He doesn't hide his desire to be the next president, and he is the champion and the hero of America First approach, which called for less involvement in the Middle East region. And the war proved that more involvement of the United States is very costly and doesn't serve U.S. interest. It may be serve Israeli interest, but there is a lot of distance now between the MAGA and the America First team and Israeli politics. And I believe U.S. and then this current administration is trying to turn this page, the page of hostility with Iran that lasted for over 40 years. And I believe J.D. Vance is his rhetoric against Israel is very alarming to the Jewish community and the Israeli lobby here. And I believe this administration is sincere about having new page in the Middle East, which Iran to be a normalized nation, having relations with the United States, with the Arab neighbors, and Israel not the only hegemony country in the region. And the Israeli-American relation, which has been burden for America, is going to be less important and less effective in this new Middle East.
Yeah, well, you know, J.D. Vance will either be the hero or the villain. We have a long way to go, folks, okay? At the end of the day, I mean, we can go through all the points of the Memorandum of Understanding, which are very important, and Sarah is absolutely right. There is ambiguity. That's a good thing, because that means there is something to talk about here. But at the end of the day, the Iranians have leverage. They have very important, powerful leverage, and they will use it, okay? The 60-day period is very artificial. I don't think all of these issues are going to be resolved. Some might be, and it might be ongoing. But Donald Trump needs the Strait of Hormuz to be open. And that's what we have to keep our focus on, because when he goes on Truth Social, he's very, very, very sensitive about how many ships are going through, which, of course, he doesn't have any idea. I read it every single day. I don't know who's giving him this information. The United States does not control it. Iran does. So what's most important is to keep an eye on the leverage that Iran has as we move forward. Go ahead, in Lebanon.
Absolutely. I think, first of all, the initial objectives of the war, none of them so far have been achieved. And rather than deal with the ballistic missile program or deal with the regime change, or perhaps the only thing that's still on the table is the nuclear arsenal, Trump is busy trying to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. So I do think that this card is the most powerful card so far that the Iranians have. And technically, I'm not a military expert, but it's if the Americans do not follow through with some of the main provisions of the Memorandum of Understanding, the Iranians can most likely resume this siege, although we don't know whether either party is able or capable or willing to resume a large-scale war in the region. I think currently, at least, I think both parties are not going in that direction. But the more important point, in my opinion, and the Gordian knot really now, is Lebanon. And whether Iranian leverage is going to be strong enough to twist the arm of Israel, or whether U.S. pressure is going to translate from statements to actual, substantive constraints, whether it has to do, whether it's in relation to arms provision, whether in relation to diplomacy in the U.N. So this is really the testing ground for this understanding. The Iranians... It's true that the Memorandum of Understanding does not have clear language on the withdrawal, but what changed the game, Peter, is actually for the first time Iran attacked or retaliated against Israel after Israel has bombed Lebanon. So if this new rules of engagement is going to be on the table, I think this is what will provide Iran with leverage. So I think we have to really watch very closely. In my view, so far the Islamabad and the Hormuz track is going as planned, despite all the potential hiccups. But I think the real knot is Lebanon, and whether on Tuesday, the same day that the Lebanese government officials were meeting with their Israeli counterparts in Washington, Israel continued breaking the ceasefire and actually killed at least two people. And so, this is where we have to keep our eyes on and see whether this is going to continue or whether this deal is going to fall apart.
Yeah, Sarah, I mean, if we look at it, from like 30,000 feet up, Trump's problem is not Iran, it's Israel.
Well, I mean, I think that's crystal clear, and I don't think it's a mystery to even average high school students in the United States that the reason the United States went to this war is because Israel trapped the United States into this war. I don't even think that the full story of how Israel was able to put so much pressure on Trump to go to this war has been fully told. I think that the contemporaneous release of very damning revelations from the Epstein files literally 2 days before Trump agreed to launch this war on Israel is probably more than coincidence. Again, we don't have the full facts. But Israel is a strategic liability. It's a legal liability, exposing the U.S. to war crimes prosecutions at the ICC for aiding and abetting. It's a moral liability. It's a political liability in elections now in the United States, unprecedented in my lifetime, to see candidates for the U.S. Congress running specifically on a platform that they will not take money from AIPAC, and they want Israel to end the genocide and end the occupation. That is really a dramatic break from the politics of the past. And this debacle in Iran has, I think, caused a fissure and a break in U.S.-Israel relations that, again, was building and building up since the genocide and the ongoing genocide in Gaza, but now has reached really like tsunami proportions.
Who would have thought only a few years ago that we'd be having this conversation? I find it so truly remarkable. Maybe that's the only silver lining in this strategy. I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue more discussion on the MOU. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the MOU. Okay, let's go back to Mohammed in Washington. We don't know how this is all going to play out. Even the first few days of this 60-day period have been some surprises. Again, you know, J.D. Vance is the face of it, at least for the time being, in saying that assets will be released to Iran, but the United States will control how it is spent. It's for the American farmers and all this. I saw nothing on the Iranian side whatsoever. I mean, they're just kind of making it up as they go along. Is this a silver or sugarcoating it for an American audience here? Because we saw in Switzerland after Trump's trash talk, unbelievable trash talk, and very threatening, which is a violation of the MOU itself against the delegation, the Iranian delegation. We still know that Iran can just simply walk. Donald Trump can't. Go ahead, Mohammed.
Sure. I believe J.D. Vance was speaking to American audience, not for international community or Iranian audience. He is trying to sell this MOU here in America, where a lot of suspicion about it and a lot of concerns. The Israeli and Jewish lobby is launching huge attack against this MOU and against Vance. And today in most American media outlets, there's a lot of Jewish voices and American Jewish voices questioning this memorandum. They are saying, why we give Iran these billions of dollars while we are getting just promises in return? And they, of course, they ignore that that money is belong to Iran initially, and it's froze against the Iranian well. And I think as well, in the same time, the memorandum of understanding is succeeded in the first 2 days of negotiation. They put the foundation for what to come in the next 2 months. It's obvious the Trump administration is preparing and willing to succeed in these 60 days to achieve as much as they can. However, they don't have a lot of cards and don't have a lot of leverage. Iran does. And I believe that's what the administration recognized, and they want to cut their losses and Iran now, as you said, they have the upper hand, and they know the American politics, how it runs, and there's election midterm is coming soon, the primaries are heated, and the Iran war is just a liability for the Republicans and for a Trump administration. Therefore, he went through this memorandum of understanding, which a lot of American analysts, even the pro-Israel, believe it's just serve the Iranian interest, and no American interest is served directly from this memorandum. But cutting the American losses is big good point for Trump, because he knows the military option doesn't produce anything, and more attacks on Iran will not change the decision making in Tehran. And Iranians were not going to give U.S. and Israel anything more than what they offered them in the memorandum of understanding.
Okay, let me go back to Lebanon. Hisham, one of the things I find really interesting is the MOU that we're discussing right now. Its origins, its genesis goes all the way back to April. Now, there are a variety of news reports. We should take the be suspicious of it, particularly if it's Western media. But Trump had been presented with this over and over again, and he kept saying no, and then he finally said yes. The reason why I'm bringing it up here, that we can watch the song and dance, the circus that follows around J.D. Vance. But, you know, there's a trend here, is that Iran slowly but surely, through diligence and through patience, it's getting basically what it wants, and it's going to continue down the path. There'll be a lot of surprises coming out of American media, and J.D. Vance and the Democrats said that, and there's a lot of white noise out there. But it's for me, the statecraft, the ability, the diplomatic ability of the Iranians is quite remarkable. Go ahead.
I think this is an important point, because initially when we spoke about the rift between the United States and Israel, it may appear as if the United States is the good guy and Israel is the bad guy. Well, they're both, in a sense, bad guys, because we have a long history of the United States basically, you know, applying its imperialist agenda all over the world. It still is enforcing a siege on Cuba. It's done regime change in Venezuela, and in our region, even very recently, Trump was trying to incite Syria's president to actually potentially invade Lebanon if Israel can do the job. So the interest of the United States has been to destabilize this region or stabilize it. So my point is, the United States is not seeking necessarily stable statist conditions. If a state is pro-United States, it will try to support the regime. If a regime is anti-United States, it will try to partition, destabilize the regime. That is the logic of U.S. imperialism in the region. The Trump has tried very hard, and maybe he got on a high after Venezuela, thinking that he can just use this hyperbolic rhetoric. And the Iranians, in the early stages of the war, people were saying, you know, this example of the Iranians, here we use the idea of trying to slaughter someone with a piece of cotton, doing it extremely slowly. Initially, it didn't work, but it looks like the diligence of the Iranians, the seriousness, both of their ability to undermine the military presence of the United States, but at the same time, they've used multilateral diplomacy. They have been very warm and very forward-looking with the Pakistanis. They are sending their delegations to Oman to try to actually negotiate a potential bilateral management of the straits. They have kind of kept aloof from Syria. There's some criticism even now by some commentators about their relation with Bashar al-Assad. So the Iranians have understood patiently, even though they were the only ones literally fighting the Americans, they are still trying to kind of engulf the United States with, you know, potential medium powers in order to curb U.S. influence. So I think this has worked so far. But as you said, the history of the United States in this region is a history of deception. So we have to be very careful and we have to wait it out. The other issue I think is important is the question of the orbits. If this deal through the economic sanctions relief and potentially the $300 billion investment fund, if this is intended to bring Iran into the U.S. influence and orbit, then we cannot celebrate this necessarily as an end of U.S. influence.
I agree with you. I agree with you 100%.
This is another important point.
But that's not brought up enough. That's such an important point because, you know, living in a BRICS country here, trying to reimagine and reconstruct a new world order, because the United States is so disruptive, I really am very wary of Iran, you know, getting all of its dollars and getting back into the dollar system, that's not going to bode well for them. And I hope that there'll be more people that will be talking about it.
I hope so. Just quickly, sorry to not take too long, but we have an open door policy that happened after Camp David, and we saw what happened to the economic sovereignty of Egypt. We have the same approach initially towards Syria. We don't know if Iran can withstand it, but it's something maybe not in the short term. I think the priority is de-escalation. The priority is ending military operations. But when we think about U.S. empire and what's going to happen to U.S. influence in the region, that is a question we have to put on the table.
You know, Sarah, there's a scenario out there that is getting a lot of attention, and it's very dangerous because it would entail a return to the kinetic element of this conflict, is that Iran will finally lose patience with Israel's activities in southern Lebanon, and it will use military force. The question will the United States assist Israel? And that is a big question, because the way I look at it, Trump finally has found his off-ramp, okay? He's pushed it on the J.D. Vance. He wants to think about the ballroom and things like that. Will Trump go back into war for Israel at this point?
Well, starting with the understanding that Trump's conduct and behavior is highly erratic and unpredictable, and he is also exercising more unchecked power than any prior president that I can think of. As of right now, I don't see that happening. Again, J.D. Vance's remarks today emphasizing that all countries in the region have right to defend themselves is an important shift in U.S. Mm-hmm. characterization of the Middle East, which has only been about Israel having the right to protect itself. All of the ways in which I think the Trump administration understands how Israel's conduct in Lebanon is a liability makes me expect that they will continue to push Israel to stop, that Israel will keep trying to sabotage the MOU, but that the United States will not support Israel in its ongoing occupation in Lebanon. So if this results in Israeli forces being forced to leave Lebanon again, yet another silver lining of this war with Iran.
Mohammed, where do we go from here? I mean, are we going to watch the same thing that we saw play out over the weekend in Switzerland? A lot of theatrics here. I can't see how the Iranians are going to play along with this charade here. Their patience isn't infinite. They need their oil to get to market. They need to rebuild their own economy. And one important thing that has to be mentioned here is that they want a new regional security architecture. That's their end game here, and I think it's within their reach.
Yes, indeed. I believe the 60 days negotiation is promising for both sides, for Washington and for Tehran. Tehran is getting a lot in this period, starting with the 60 days permission to sell and trade its oil globally in U.S. dollar. And then that's something the U.S. Treasury announced yesterday, which received nicely within the segment of anti-war in Washington. However, it was received with a lot of suspicion from pro-Israel in both parties, in Democratic and Republican leadership. I believe the administration is putting a lot of its face, a lot of its capital in this memorandum of understanding, and they want Iran to continue in this diplomatic path, because they have, as we said earlier, a new vision for the Middle East. They want Iran to be normalized country in the region, to be integrated of the new structure of the region, and to keep Iran distance from China and Russia. That's what U.S. is thinking about. They don't think just of the narrow Middle East. They look at the global competition with China, and they want to put Iran farther more from Beijing, from China. And I believe they are succeeding so far. And the ball is in the Iranian side. Will they accept, as our friend said from Lebanon, to be the new Egypt of the region, to have normal relation with the Gulf, with the United States, and maybe receive aid of the United States to fall under their umbrella, or just will continue its independence path and being neutral and power of Brexit and the anti-American domination. That's something we'll be witnessing in the next few weeks and months.
One would hope that at the conclusion of all of this is the end of military hostilities and a halt to the Greater Israel project, which would be good for the entire region, if not the entire world. That's all the time we have. Fascinating discussion. I want to thank my guests in Washington, New York, and in Lebanon. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk Rules.